The Study of Daniel Outline. Listening time is approximately 7 minutes. Let's take a look at the outline. There are different ways to outline Daniel. We're going to take it chapter by chapter and grouping of verses. But really, if you look at chapters 1 through 6, it could be called the what? The historic night with prophetic light. Why would they call it that? No, he wasn't just involved in a night. But why would it be night instead of day? Well, there's a lot of prophecy and visions. And it's sort of like we're blinded, like it's dark. But he adds light to it. He illuminates it. Because God gives him the insight for it. And it's not just for the king Nebuchadnezzar. It's for us today that we have light coming out of it. Truth coming out. We have several subpoints in there. We certainly see the decline of Judah. Would be a very difficult thing. I mean, we were upset when we saw two buildings fall down. What if you saw your whole city gone? The walls gone? The temple gone? What's left other than just your life? So I think sometimes we forget about that. Daniel's, he didn't actually see the destruction, but I'm sure he heard about it after that fourth invasion. But he's in Babylon, and all this is happening. He's in captivity. We have then the dream of Nebuchadnezzar. We have the decree that he makes to make him an idol. Then we have another dream of this great tree situation. The downfall of Babylon. The decree of Darius the Mede. And in chapters 7 through 12, the second half, we have the prophetic light in the historic darkness. Does that make sense? Because what happens? Do people learn? Nebuchadnezzar did eventually, but look what his son did. He desecrated the temple relics by, in an orgy, drinking wine and everything and toasting to false gods with the chalices from the temple. And God said, that's it. And that's when the writing came on the wall. We'll study that in detail. So just because there is prophetic light does not mean there won't be historic darkness. I think we live in a very dark period of American history, but there's certainly prophetic light if we want to find it. It's right there in God's Word. It's been interpreted for us. But there are many subpoints there you can look at. But it kind of gives an outline. There's another version to an outline. It's a little less involved. We have the times of the Gentiles, chapters 1, 2, and 7. We have the terror of the Antichrist, chapters 7, 8, and 11. Then we have the triumph of Jesus Christ, chapters 2 and 7. And the time of the return of Jesus Christ, chapter 12. Kind of characterizes what that time would be. And there's some other verses in 2 Thessalonians 2:8 and Zechariah 12:4 and 13:1 gives us some insight into that. And we'll go back to that later when we get to that point. I think that's a little easier to understand. I like the other one because it kind of gives a spiritual, philosophical insight into it. You could preach a whole message on that and those two concepts there. Because at this point, we'll be going into each chapter with the key concepts of each chapter. So really, you could say there are four major themes in Daniel. The times of the Gentiles, about the Antichrist, the coming of Jesus Christ, the triumph of him coming, and then the timing of it. That gives us insight to how things are going to be when he does return. And people say there's no evidence that Jesus will ever return. How false that can be. As Zechariah 14 says, he even sets foot on the Mount of Olives. Is there a Mount of Olives today? Yes, you can go and stand on the Mount of Olives. It's still there. Any comments or questions? I try to use a spiral approach to teaching. I don't know if you are aware of that. This kind of a thing. You can see there are overlaps. We've done some things here But then we got into some overlapping of things from Revelation and other parts of the Bible. As we go on, we're going to continue this. So just because you missed something, some of this will be brought forward and meshed into this. So there's several places of convergence. I try to teach that way because I think if you don't, you get segmented. You're going into details here, but now you forget that this fits into this. And if you see that, our minds are able to construct the actual lesson. There are several building blocks that are involved. We have to have a knowledge base upon which to think from. And so if we don't get a knowledge base of this, and we're just taking the spiritual messages from it, I think then that leaves people floating. The thing you find in sermons too, if they can give a cultural setting, a historic setting, and get people into the mindset at that time, they're going to understand the spiritual implications better. And that's why I use that approach. Sometimes it appears that we're being repetitive, but I think it's necessary.
You get a refreshing as you go through the repetition.
Yes.
You're refreshed. Because we don't all catch it the first time, but we get refreshed, and then it brings it back and gives us a little more depth. That's the way I look at it.